Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire. I'm Tom Carnduff and joining me this week is Radio Yorkshire's Billy Banks. We'll be chatting about all the usual big stories from the Football League, the managerial and transfer news, as well as previewing all the big games coming up in the next 7 days.
This is the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Hello, welcome to the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire. I'm Billy Banks and joining me is the editor of the 72.co.uk. That's Tom Carnduff. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
I'm all right, thank you. I'm feeling quite smug, if I'm honest, because I've nearly finished my Christmas shopping.
Wow. How are you organised? Not very well.
Not very well.
I only started like, I'd say this morning. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, leaving it late.
You're not a Christmas Eve dasher, are you?
Might be this year.
I wouldn't wish that on anyone. You can send us your thoughts via at FBL72 and you can visit the 72.co.uk. Now, Tom, it's been a big weekend in the Football League, as always. What are the big things on the website?
We'll start off with Tony Mowbray's Coventry City. They obviously lost at Sheffield United 1-0 yesterday, thanks to a Billy Sharp goal. Mm. However, managerless Fulham, still managerless Fulham.
I know, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Seems to talk about it every week that Fulham are still looking for a manager. But the latest name to be linked is Tony Mowbray. Oh. Apparently they're targeting the Coventry manager. Obviously, Coventry are doing very well at the moment. Mm. Got a strong side there. A team who could probably get promoted to the Championship this season. However, you look at Fulham and the financial situation they've kind of got. They've got the money, the finances behind them. Even with a good Coventry side, it might tempt him to go to make that move to the Championship. Not too sure, really.
I think so. I mean, he was at Middlesbrough, wasn't he, Tony Mowbray? His stock sort of fell while he was there. He had a time at Celtic, which wasn't particularly successful as well. And I think he had to go lower in the Football League to sort of build his career back up.
Yeah.
So this shows that he's managing to do that. The Fulham job's a weird one, though, because, like you mentioned, they've got money. It's in West London, so it's a desirable location. Mm. Everything's set up, really, to go and get promoted back to the Premier League, but no one wants the job.
And Fulham have struggled, though, since falling out of the Premier League. They've got a good set of players there, but as a team, it just doesn't seem to be working. They can't get into the top half of the table, really, let alone the promotion places.
Well, they had that disastrous start under Felix Magath, didn't they? Yeah. They lose like 7 of the first 8, I think it was.
Terrible under. Obviously, well, there was a lot of questions over his methods and how he works and the cheese to heal and all that. But since then, it's just no one wants it. And then Kit Simmons came in, didn't really do that much.
He did okay. He sort of consolidated them as a Championship side, but that's probably not what the fans want.
Yeah.
Probably better than using cheese to heal injuries, though. I mean, that's not in Grey's Anatomy. It wasn't
anyway. No, definitely not. But
So no one seems to want the Fulham job. Steve Clarke was in the running for it and turned it down when he was at Reading. He's available again. Is that a possibility?
Might go back for him, yeah. I think Steve Clarke's problem was it obviously came public that he was interested in the Fulham job and went for talks with Fulham. Then he lost. I think that might have been what caused him to lose his job at Reading. I think the fans turned on him a bit, lost that loyalty. But I don't know, Fulham just seem to be looking at absolutely everyone. Dennis Bergkamp's was linked with the Reading job. I don't know whether they'll look at him at Fulham, but Jaap Stam's been linked as well today.
Well, he's come out and said he really wants the job. He's been coaching in Holland, I believe. He was a fantastic centre-back, but we don't really know much about his coaching credentials.
They just seem to have got so much choice to who they can get, but yeah, it's taken them so long to choose someone to manage. They brought in Stuart Gray last week, but then turns out he's not actually going to be manager or head coach. He's senior coach who takes training, has taken the games.
And reports into about 5 different people, which is strange. He reports into more people than that guy with the white beard on Christmas Eve. Bless him.
It's a weird one. It just seems to be he's doing everything that a head coach would do, bar the transfers.
So. And the title.
Yeah, that's it. That's all it seems to be at the moment. So it's a bit of a weird one with Stuart Gray being there.
I think you've got to feel sorry for Stuart Gray because he did a good job at Wednesday, then got the tin tack, and now he's not even trusted to be the head coach of Fulham, which is an interesting one. So Tony Mowbray then, I think they could realistically tempt him away from Coventry.
Yeah, Coventry, even if they could go up, their heavy reliance on the loan system, they've got a lot of players on loan. Don't know if they'll be there next season, so it'd be interesting to see if they do go up, how they'll approach summer transfer window and whether they can actually stay up next season.
We've got the lad Armstrong from Newcastle, he's banging him in.
Seems to be scoring all the time for him, but would he be able to go back to Coventry next season, though, with his goal-scoring form at the moment? Not saying he's would get into the team at Newcastle, but surely they'd look to ship him out towards maybe top-end championship to see how he could cope there. But
I think so. That'd be the natural progression for me, for Armstrong.
Yeah.
What else is on the website at the moment?
Ipswich Town. Mick McCarthy won Manager of the Month. Striker Daryl Murphy won Player of the Month. It was a bit of a successful week for them last week as well. They're doing well at the moment, sixth in the table. I say this every time we talk about Mick McCarthy, but I'm a big fan of him.
You've got to be a big fan of Mick.
Everyone loves Mick, yeah. But what he's done at Ipswich, when he took over there, they were 22nd, 23rd. And look at them now, promotion contenders, real promotion contenders, you know, definite playoff candidates anyway. Whether they could go on and win the playoffs, I don't know. It's a really, really tough division this season in terms of the top teams anyway. It's more competitive than it's ever been, I think.
I think so. I mean, when you look at, you know, the budgets that teams like Derby have got,
yeah.
Middlesbrough, yeah. Hull, Burnley haven't got a big budget, but they signed Andre Grace, and they've got a decent budget, and of course parachute payments. And then teams like Sheffield Wednesday with the amount of money that they've got. I think Ipswich, that's the thing, they have literally no money to spend on players, yet McCarthy consistently wrings the best out of his players.
Yeah.
And I think it's great to see. I think they're the only team like that, really, at the top of the Championship at the moment.
Yeah, it will be really, really interesting because they made, you know, they're in the same position last season. Mick McCarthy, he's got them playing. It seems to be a feel-good factor around Ipswich at the moment. They're expecting to win games. It's going to be a tough one for them, though, because, like you said, they can't really compete with the budgets that the rest of the league's got, especially going into January. Some of their players will get interest. You know, you look at Rudy Gestede going to Villa. He wasn't Blackburn's top striker. However, he got the interest. You could say the same with Daryl Murphy. He scores a lot of goals. If they lose him, well, depending on the money they'd get, who they could get in to be as prolific. Should be an interesting one. But I think they could carry on and make playoffs definitely at the end of the season.
Well, I think McCarthy and Ipswich did one of my favourite bits of the business in the summer. Tyrone Mings going to Bournemouth.
Yeah.
They paid 10 grand for him, sold him for 8 million, and then he got injured straight away.
That's
so
it.
They've literally had 8 million quid and for a player who's not even played.
I think he's out for the season, isn't he?
Yeah, whole season.
That's a bit unfortunate for Bournemouth, but...
And for the player.
Yeah, definitely.
But
yeah,
great bit of business for Ipswich.
Yeah, fantastic, isn't it?
Daryl Murphy, he was prolific last season. Didn't start this season so well, but now he's really starting to bang the goals in, isn't he?
Yeah, shows that old saying, isn't it? What the form is temporary, class is permanent, the old cliche. But he's a fantastic striker. He knows where the goal is. He scores, well, now he's scoring regularly. He's found that form that he had last season. And hopefully for Ipswich, whether there'll be any interest for him in January, who knows? But if they can keep hold of him, they've got a real shot of going up this season.
And that's a key question, though, if they keep hold of him.
I mean,
Sheffield Wednesday were offering stupid money for him in the summer. I'm sure a club might be looking at him in January as well.
If you can get stupid money for a player, if someone comes in with £10 million plus, you've got to look at that and go, well, we could get a good enough striker to replace him and then still have a few million to spend elsewhere. So you can't really turn it down, can you?
Talking of stupid money, Bolton are also featured on the website, aren't they? Facing a winding up petition. They're in a big financial mess, Bolton. It's not very nice to see either.
No, the team's not doing well at the bottom of the league either. You could look at Northampton in the League Two and say the financial problems there, but at least the team's doing well. Something to take your mind off it, but the team's struggling, the club financially struggling. There was the talk of a takeover, and you know Amir Khan was going to be on this on this takeover consortium, but that seems to have slowed down. The club is, thought to owe debts of up to £173 million.
Ouch.
It doesn't look good at all. They've brought in Trevor Birch to obviously be financial advisor there.
He's done this before as well.
Yeah, he was at Leeds United.
Portsmouth as well.
Yeah, Portsmouth. He's been at Leeds United when they were struggling around 2003. They seem to be in a bit of a situation. But then if this consortium do take over, I believe that the current owner's going to get rid of the debt. He's going to give them the training ground and the stadium to go with it as well. But you look at the team at the moment, if they go down as well, the club's struggling, the team's struggling, it's just not a good situation at all at Bolton at the moment.
Well, it's a team of geriatrics as well.
Yeah.
Because the other day, I think Shola Amiobi came off and Emil Heskey replaced him. I mean, he really is having to do the best with what he can, Neil Lennon. It's a really tough job. He's got Gary Medine there as well, who seemed to have burned all his bridges with other teams, and he's ended up at Bolton. I know they're bottom, but is Neil Lennon doing a decent job at least keeping them in contention, of keeping in touch with the teams above them in the who aren't in the drop zone and in the drop zone? Because then if you know if someone came and took over them before the end of the season, they've still got a realistic chance of staying up, haven't they?
Yeah, like you said, you look at their transfer policy, though. He's not got much to play with at all. The financial problems surrounding the club that he's having to look to players such as Shola Amiobi, you know, Emil Heskey, players who are really, really past it. To get a team out every week, you know, occasionally, like you said, keeping contention, he's doing very well. I think any manager, you put them in that situation, they're going to struggle. It's great having, you know, such and such players, but then if there's turmoil and controversy off the pitch, the focus isn't going to be on the game and they're going to struggle every week, because if you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, you don't know, well, the players don't know if they're going to get paid next week, whatever. Are they going to perform? Not really. It seems to be a pattern that's happened at a lot of clubs in recent years, and it seems to be happening to Bolton at the moment.
Yeah, dark times on the dark side of the Pennines for Bolton Wanderers. And also on the website, Tom, pretty close at the top of the table still. Getting really interesting, and it's set to be a promotion battle that goes the distance, I think.
Yeah, it's really, really competitive. We ran a poll on our Twitter on Sunday afternoon, and it's, you know, it's so close on people's opinions. Middlesbrough and Derby seem to be the favourites for who's going to win the league, but it shows how close it is this season. Brighton are leading at the moment. Not a lot of people think they can keep it up, but then you look
keep
at
getting results.
They're still unbeaten, and
he's got Derby at the weekend.
Exactly, away from home, he's got them playing good football. It's so close. I think it's been as close as it's ever been in years. You look at recent years, you know, like Leicester ran away with it. Last season, Bournemouth were always up there, whereas teams are, you know, swapping in and out of first, second place constantly. And then below that, even there was a bit of a gap, but even the teams in fifth, sixth, seventh are still in with a shout of pushing up, closing that gap. And then if that happens, we're in for a right treat second half of the season.
Well, there's two good battles for me. There's the top five teams for the automatic promotion places, and then there's that sixth spot.
Yeah.
Because there's a bit of a gap, isn't there? Yeah. Where there's another five or six, maybe even it could be 10 teams later on in the season, are all battling for almost one promotion spot in a way. Yeah. It's a really exciting one. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this transpires in May.
Well, yeah, there's surprise teams in there as well. You look at like Cardiff and Sheffield Wednesday, who last season, you said playoffs, they'd probably laugh, say, oh, not possible. Then Cardiff are in contention for it, Sheffield Wednesday. Look at Brighton at the top. Last season, they were nearly got relegated, or they were only a few points off getting relegated, and now they're top of the league, and we're talking about them as potential league winners. It just shows what a good season it is and how good the league is currently.
Well, that's the end of part one of the 72 podcast. Coming up, we'll be talking about the league leaders, Brighton.
You're listening to the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Yes, you're listening to the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire. I'm Tom Carnduff, and carrying on from the last section, we'll be paying attention to the top end of the Championship table now. And in particular, we'll be looking at the team who currently occupy first place, and that is Brighton. And joining me on the phone is one of the 72.co.uk's Brighton and Hove Albion writers, George Kane. George, how are we doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. You?
Yeah, I'm not too bad myself, thank you. We'll start off straight away by talking about the turnaround from last season. Just how do you describe Brighton's last season compared to this one? I mean, you're unbeaten so far.
Yeah. Well, a massive turnaround, really, to be honest. Last year, we had no sort of character. We had no confidence. We would, like, go behind and we just wouldn't look like coming back this season. I think Houghton's definitely got confidence. He's definitely got the dressing room behind him, and that's really shown. Like against Charlton the other week, when we went 2-0 down at half time, we looked like we were going to go in at half time and come back out, and we did, and we came back and won 3-2, which really showed a big, big difference from last season.
And you look at the table now, Brighton currently top, and like we said, they're unbeaten. Can they hold on to it? Can Brighton go all the way and finish top come May and the end of the season?
Well, I think top spot is going to be difficult. There's Middlesbrough up there, Hull. There's a lot of experienced teams in this position. I think as a Brighton fan, I'd be happy with a playoff place. Whether that be automatic or not, I don't think we will get an automatic spot personally. As I say, a playoff place would be absolutely brilliant from a Brighton perspective.
And we look at the strikers that Brighton have. It's, you know, arguably the strong point of the team. Bobby Zamora came back in the summer. Just how important has he been for Brighton so far this season?
Well, he's been important on the pitch and also off the pitch as well. A fan favourite amongst the Brighton fans. But on the pitch as well, he's got experience in the box. If you give the ball to him in front of the goal, he's going to score 9 times out of 10. And he showed that already scoring 5 goals, which isn't actually that bad considering, you know, he's getting on a bit now. But yeah, he really proves his experience in this league, I think.
And we look at one of his, you know, potential strike partners in James Wilson. You know, a bit of a good signing. He was in and around the Manchester United first team. Could Brighton keep hold of him? Because realistically, you know, there is the chance of him returning to Man United. Should Brighton maybe look for a possible permanent option for him come January?
Yeah, well, that's the worry, I think, amongst Brighton fans at the moment, is that with Man United struggling to score goals, is that Wilson could always be recalled. And I think because he is a youth loan, which means he can be recalled at any time by United, I think Wilson would definitely be vital for Brighton this season in going up. So I think if he did get recalled, that would be a massive, massive blow. I mean, Hemed's not a bad option, Zamora's not a bad option, but really, Wilson is the player that we've needed since losing Ochoa and losing Ashley Barnes.
And we're approaching January now. That's only a few weeks away. The transfer window opens. Do Brighton need to strengthen in any areas, or is the current group of players good enough to see promotion come the end of the season?
Well, I think we've got good backup in most of the positions, really. Although at left back, we are looking a bit weak. We've got Calderon playing there at the moment, who is filling in for Guy Tambong, and also Rossini, who unfortunately got injured. I think we've got enough striking options, and in midfield, we look very, very strong. We've got Kyle and Stevens, we've Crofts, Ince, we've just signed that towel guy, and we've also got Forster Kaski as well. So I think midfield striking options, we look good. But I think defence is probably an option. Position, where we need to work on a little bit.
And is there any player in mind that you have that you think Brighton should maybe look at signing?
Not particularly. I mean, a left back is definitely what we need. I don't think anywhere else on the pitch is sort of in, but I think definitely a left back with good championship experience would definitely be what we need.
And the final thing I want to ask is, obviously, we're talking now about Brighton as, you know, potential league winners, promotion contenders, whatever. You know, you look at the table now, you've got Brighton, Middlesbrough, Borough, Derby, and throw Burnley in there as well.
Yeah.
Who do you think are the two who are going to get those automatic spots, you know, come the end of the season? Can Brighton be one of those teams, or realistically, is it going to be playoffs?
I think realistically, it's going to be playoffs. I think Derby have been in this position so many times. They're under a new manager now in Clement as well. I think he'll probably be enough for them to get over the line, automatic spot. I think Middlesbrough, they've been close in the last few seasons. Hull just come down from the Premier League, so they've had the experience of going up before. I think realistically, I'm looking at probably Derby and Middlesbrough to go up, and Brighton to sort of finish in a playoff position, which, as a Brighton fan, will be absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, George, that's absolutely fantastic. Thanks for joining me.
No problem.
All about the game. The 72 Podcast, in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome to part 3 of the 72 Podcast, in association with Radio Yorkshire. I'm Billy Banks, and with me the editor, Tom Carnduff. We've been talking about various matters in the Championship and also focusing on the only unbeaten side left in the Football League, which of course is Brighton. We're going to move on, Tom, to some more issues in the Football League. Let's start with that crazy Italian, Mad Mass, Massimo Cellino, having a rant at Charlton fans for protesting before their game against Leeds.
Yeah, this becomes a weekly thing where there seems to be a crazy news story about Massimo Cellino coming out.
Yeah.
This week was before Leeds United's away game at Charlton, which finished in a 4-0 draw. Massimo Cellino was seen, we'll set the scene, and the Charlton fans were protesting against their current owners, not happy with the situation at the club. Cellino was seen spotted in a, you know, up in the with the directors. He came out for a cigarette. There was a bit of, you know, singing and joking between the two. But then I don't know what caused it, but Cellino felt the need to go out and address these protesters about supporting the team, as he put it, and it seems weird. I don't know why he got involved in it, but he seemed to get involved probably just because he feels he has to.
I think I know why he got involved, because he was... I remember the Blackburn game for Leeds United, and the fans were really shouting, you know, Massimo out and this sort of thing. And he looked deeply, deeply shocked and hurt, didn't he? And I think it's just like he's seen that happen to himself and probably thinks, looking at the Charlton fans, it's not a nice place to be if you're the owners or the chairman. and you're having the fans against you so much. So maybe that's got something to do with it.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, like you said, he's experienced it at Leeds at the moment. A lot of Leeds fans aren't happy with his ownership of the club. I've got the quote, and I'll read it. Okay. Swearing excluding.
Yeah, please do a clean version,
yeah,
Tom.
Right, so he says, support the effing team. Don't waste your time with that, in terms of the protests. Mm-hmm. You have a good team which don't deserve to be where it is. I tell you the truth. I wish we win, but if we don't win today, I'm happy anyway. I don't give an F. You have a good team. You give an excuse to the players to play. Yeah, of which the Charlton fans responded by saying, we love Cellino, we love Cellino, we love Cellino.
Well, at least some fans love him.
Well,
then.
Yeah, he might end up going to Charlton, who knows now. But it's just, I don't know. You run out of words to talk about him anymore. It's just, it's expected now, isn't it, really, for him to turn up and just do something like that. Feeling the need to go out and address these protesters.
He loves the media. He's always available on his mobile, doesn't he, to talk to the media. He does enjoy that side of things on his own terms. Maybe it's his way of just getting a headline that's not bad things happening at Leeds United. It certainly is very, very interesting. But Charlton are sort of showing signs of life under the new gaffer, aren't they? They've had a couple of wins and a draw against Leeds, which is a credible result. So, the fans may be unhappy with the owners, but they need to get behind the team because they've got a relegation fight.
I think, in the current situation, I can understand, that there's the annoyance of at the club, if you want the owners out, then fair enough. I think every fan's got the right to say so, to protest before. But then I think when you're in the ground, you've kind of, especially the situation that Charlton are in, you want to get the team out of where they are. If they can get to that safety point, then maybe address the ownership issues. But for the moment, you kind of want to be supporting your team, backing your team. Because if you fall out to League One, as a lot of teams know, it's a very hard league to get out of and get back into the Championship. It's not as easy as expected, and that's happened in recent years.
Yeah, sometimes I think they should rename League One the Free For All, because really is an absolute
just anyone
melee.
Comes up. You look at Yeovil a few seasons ago, they came up and now they look destined for relegation from League Two. But
it could be out of the Football League.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. It's just one of those leagues.
From Massimo Cellino, another headline about him, of course, to one of his former Chargers, Dave Hockaday. Now, apparently he'd crawl through broken glass to get the Leeds job back. I don't think that'd be happening anytime soon, but what can you tell us about this one?
Yeah, Dave Hockaday, the surprise, Massimo Cellino's first appointment.
Yeah, described as like a grapefruit.
Yeah.
Or was it a watermelon?
Watermelon, that's it. You've got to cut them open to, Dave Hockaday hired him in the summer after sacking last summer. First appointment after sacking Brian McDermott. Massive surprise, I think.
I'd never heard of him, honestly.
No, I don't think anyone had ever heard of him. Got the job, just massive. I don't know whether he could see him as maybe a yes man type. Cellino. He likes to be hands on. Maybe he could run the team. He could say, play like this. Hockaday would go, fine. But yeah, he's come out this week in an interview with The Sun and said that he'd crawl through broken glass to get the job back. Which I think, he's currently in charge of Kidderminster, who are bottom of the conference. So I think.
Well, that's going to be my next question. Yeah, where is Hockaday now?
He's Kidderminster side is struggling. He did go to Coventry last season.
Did some coaching there.
And he did take charge of one game, which they won.
Really?
So he's got 100% win ratio at Coventry.
So maybe, I don't think it counts from one game.
Yeah, though. I don't think he'll get the job back there soon.
Well, maybe if Mowbray's off to Fulham. Maybe
that's it. They'll look at that. The most successful managers in our history, Dave Hockaday.
I seem to remember doing some research on Dave Hockaday when he was linked with the Leeds job, just in case he got it. Yeah. Eventually he did, obviously. He didn't really have a good record at Forest Green. I mean, they had one of the best budgets out of the Football League, and he didn't really have a good record with them. So is he even a good coach at all?
I think he's a good coach. I'd give him that. You look at his CV, he's been at a lot of big clubs. He was at Watford when they got promoted. He claims he set up the first youth academy, whatever, but he's been at a lot of clubs where he's coached. So as a coach, I think he's a very, very good coach. But as a manager / head coach, I don't think he's quite cut out. And that maybe have been it when Cellino came to England. He says, right, I want a good coach. Thought, oh, I've got a good coach here. Try him as head coach. Obviously, didn't work out. He was sacked by the end of August. But I don't think he's cut out for management at all whatsoever, and I don't think, crawl through broken glass or not, he'll ever get the Leeds job back again.
No, I don't think so, bless him. If it's still available on Twitter, by the way, go and check out the spoof Dave Hockaday Twitter account. Very, very fun.
Yeah,
I've not looked at that for a while. I'll check.
I wonder if it's still going.
Also, I need to talk about Sheffield United. A good win for them, beating Coventry 1-0. Billy Sharp with the winner on Sunday. Got an article by Rich Beattie on the 72.co.uk. Will they ever get out of League One? Is that a rhetorical question or a general question?
It seems to be a hot top. Yeah, every season we look at League One, Sheffield United are there and they're always favourites or always second favourites to win the league. And it is that question, will they ever get out of League One? They're struggling at the moment. Got a great win against Coventry. I spoke to Nigel Atkins and George Long on Thursday. They seem quite confident. They got a good team spirit there. They play, work for each other, but struggled with results. They got a scrappy win against Oldham, but good win against Coventry. You know, a confident, informed Coventry side coming to Bramall Lane. May have helped that the pressure was off them a bit. So a lot of people look at Sheffield United Bramall Lane and go, yeah, that's a win. It was shifted onto Coventry for that one. They managed to get the win. But then you look at where they are. They're still down there. You expect Sheffield United to be playoffs, never fall out the top six throughout the season. Will they ever get out of League One? That's the question. I mean, eventually they will.
They have to. But it's a huge club, and it's amazing to me that it's their fifth season in League One. Obviously, they've had they've got close a few times to getting back in the Championship. But you know, being from Sheffield myself, a lot of my friends are Wednesday fans, and it's not just amongst my friends that I notice the buzz around Sheffield Wednesday, because they're doing well in the Championship and look like they could be heading to the Premier League soon. There's a real buzz around the whole city. But for Sheffield United, it's all just doom and gloom because they're still slugging it out in the free-for-all, which is League One.
They need to get that feel-good factor back.
Yeah.
I mean, they had it at parts last season. You look at the cup runs, the FA Cup run, the Capital One Cup run, where the FA Cup, they got to Wembley. It shows that they can deal with the pressure, that they beat Championship sides along the way. Whether it's at Bramall Lane, whether it's away, you look at it, you go, we're a League One side. We beat a team above us, in a league above us. We can get to Wembley. They dealt with that pressure. Then the playoffs against Swindon last year, and that was crazy. At Bramall Lane.
It fell apart, didn't it?
Bramall Lane, they started very well that game, and then that was it. They fell apart the rest of the game, didn't show up. But then the away game was crazy. It was that 5-5 draw.
Yeah.
And it shows that whether they want to play when they can.
There's something there, isn't there? There's something to work
but then they played Shrewsbury. Well, the last game I've seen them play was the Shrewsbury Town game where they lost 4-2, and they just didn't look interested. They went 1-0 up. Shrewsbury scored 2 in 2 minutes, and that was it. Mm. Just didn't look interested, and then went to 4-1. Fair enough, they got the goal back. But even then, they just didn't look like they were going to go and get a point back or pull it back. But whether this Coventry result will give them a bit of a kick and get them going, I don't know. But they need to be a side that are top six constantly. With the squad they've got a fantastic manager, Nigel Atkins, who's been there, Premier League, everything. He knows the game. He's very passionate about the game. Good set of players. They just need to get it going and work it out. And well, hopefully for them, the Coventry result will get that going.
Yeah, they need a good run. Sheffield United, of course, have got a really good budget and a really good manager who's been there and done it with a couple of teams. So let's see in the new year if they can get close to that promotion chase. That's about it for Section 3 of the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire. Coming up, we've got more stuff about the Football League.
We love the Football League. The 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back. It's part 4 of the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire. I'm Billy Banks and Tom Carnduff, the editor, still with me. Don't forget, you can send us your thoughts via at FBL72 on Twitter. And you can also visit the 72.co.uk for all you need to know about the Football League. Let's move on to some transfer news then, Tom. Sonny Aluko set to leave Hull City.
Yeah, he's a player that's been around at Hull for a couple of seasons now, but he's found himself falling down the pecking order a bit this season and in recent weeks. He's struggled to retain that starting spot. I think he's only scored one goal this season. Got it in a late winner Fulham back in August, I think. And since then, not much has happened. He was great when he first joined. He joined them from Rangers and he got 8 goals in 17 appearances in the 12-13 season. So he was, a good player for them then. But now he's fallen down the pecking order a bit. And I think they're looking to ship him off in January, maybe to create funds for someone else to come in and hopefully help them push up and get that automatic promotion spot that they'll be aiming for.
Yeah, he's not been prolific over the last couple of seasons. Struggled in the Premier League at times. I mean, he's versatile, isn't he? He can play in an attacking role. He can play as an actual striker as well.
Yeah.
I just think that with Aluko, when he looks good, he looks very good.
Yeah.
But when he's not playing well, he looks really bad. He can be very clumsy at times, Carney. So he has good pace, but sometimes doesn't have that end product. And I think some of the quality they've got in that side is going to count against you, isn't it?
Yeah, he's shown, like you said, he's got the quality. You look at the Newcastle game, I think it was 2013, where he scored, you know, stunning, fantastic volley. It shows that, you know, he's got the quality there, but when you're struggling to get in the team, especially a team who are pushing for promotion or up there in contention of getting that second or first place, there's not going to be much squad rotation going around. He's going to have to wait around. I think he's struggled a bit with injuries, but I think his only realistic chance is if Hull get a bit of an injury, you know, a few players are out, that's when he's going to come into the side. But other than that, I don't think he stands much chance. And they may as well look to ship him off in January, I'm sure. You know, he's got a decent record, may interest a few other Championship clubs, maybe further down. We talk about, you know, Ipswich, if Daryl Murphy leaves.
Could they afford him, though? Because he must be on decent wages, having played in the Premier League and having played at Rangers as well.
Yeah, true. But then it all depends how much this is all if, you know, if someone like Murphy went. I think he'd be a top striker for a team lower down in the Championship, but purely only if they've got the finances, like you mentioned, and if they need that main striking role, because I don't think he'll want to go anywhere else just to sit on the bench and not play like he has been at Hull in recent weeks and months.
We've got Liam Bridcut to talk about, because obviously he's on loan at Leeds until January from Sunderland. But yeah, he used to play for Brighton, made his name at Brighton, did very well on that side that reached the playoffs a couple of times. He's a good player, but because he's only on loan at Leeds until January, that opens up the possibility of a January move, doesn't it? And we're hearing that Brighton could be interested in taking him back. And for Sunderland, it's a bit of a no-brainer. If they've got someone who wants to take him on a permanent deal, yeah, and he can make some money straight away, then they're going to want to do that, aren't they?
Yeah, I think Leeds had hoped that they'd have that permanent option in there in January, where they could maybe make that deal and keep him for past, you know, the spell of, or the loan spell that he's on. But then, like you said, you look at it and you think, for the player that he's at Leeds now, who are currently, you know, struggling. It's fair to say they're struggling in results. They're down towards the bottom end of the table. And then also interest from Brighton, who are currently top, looking to carry that on. A club he knows very well. He made 150-odd appearances when he was first there. It's going to be very hard for him to turn down that opportunity, especially when Sam Allardyce is saying, I don't want you, you know, you're not in the plans here. Same with Will Buckley, ex-Brighton as well. He's not in the plans. If Brighton come calling, fully understandable why he'd agree to go there as opposed to stay at Leeds.
Exactly. And Steve Evans, the head coach of Leeds, saying last week that he knows where there's loads more Bridcuts, so he doesn't sound like he'll be going for a permanent move himself.
Yeah, it seems a bit of a weird thing to say, though, because surely you'd be hoping that you can persuade the player to stay rather than, all right, kind of go then, we'll just find someone else like you. But then I think when Leeds beat Hull the other week, he put in a fantastic performance there. He's been an okay player for Leeds so far, so I think it's a bit unfair just to say, look, go then, we don't want you. You know, or if you do go, we don't want you, we'll just find someone else. It's like, well, you've got to go out and find that person and then somehow negotiate a way for them to come to Leeds at the moment with all the problems, all the talk, etc. that's going on.
Plus, you've got to rely on an erratic Italian millionaire to give you some money as well before you make a move for someone else in January. Also, Brad Walker, he's at Hartlepool at the moment. Wolves leading the race to bring him in. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Wolves seem to have looked to League Two in recent years, or the lower leagues, to do their recruitment. But yeah, Brad Walker's the latest name to be linked. Apparently, he's been attracting Premier League and Championship interest, but Wolves are leading the race. 19 years old, he's become a key member of the club's first team. He's come through the youth system there. He's made almost 100 first team appearances for Hartlepool.
Blimey.
And he broke into the team in 2013. So it shows just how obviously an important player he is, that he's playing week in, week out. Fair enough, under Ronnie Moore, maybe he's slipped off that at the moment. But it seems to be, on paper anyway, he seems to look a very good player. But obviously it's the test of whether he can cut it in the Championship for Wolves if he does go.
What sort of player is Brad Walker, and why do you think, you know, such high-profile teams are after him?
Well, obviously you look at his age, the amount of first-team experience he's got. there seems to be an emphasis on youth at the moment. Teams are looking towards youth players for the future, planning for the future. Wolves are a team that have done that, you know, not just this summer, previously. You look that he's young, but he's also got that level head. He knows the game now at a senior level. Whereas if you looked elsewhere, would you really get a 19-year-old who's got so much first-team experience without having to pay through the roof for him? If you go to League Two, you look at a team like Hartlepool, they can negotiate, but you can't turn down, you know, if they offer a million, a couple of million, whatever, you can't really turn down that money. And to Wolves, that'll seem an absolute bargain if he does turn out to be a championship quality player. When you look elsewhere, what player could you get for the same price, really, that's going to do a job that, well, if he does go in January, whether it'll be January or they'll wait to the summer, but it's going to be, should be an interesting one anyway, to see if he can cut it, can do it at championship level with Wolves.
It'd be interesting to see, you know, where he moves to, if other teams are in for him other than Wolves. Yeah, very, very interesting that. And I suppose with this, you know, the huge success of Jamie Vardy this season and Chris Smalling, of course, at Manchester United, or Mike Smalling, of course, he's an evil twin. I'm sure a lot of clubs will be looking at the lower leagues and non-league to find these players, because there is quality down there in the lower leagues that, you know, is cheap. And if you can get it right and get a bit of luck, they can make a big difference.
Yeah, I think, like you said, Jamie Vardy's highlighted that non-league is a place to go to get your transfers. Actually, Birmingham are close to signing, or were reportedly close to signing, the next Jamie Vardy, so to speak. You know, another.
I wonder how many next Jamie Vardys will be over.
How many
of
them are going to pop up this season? But he's been a bit of a prolific striker there after him. So, why not? That's the thing. I think non-league players, it's often a league overlooked, or you know, the leagues there are overlooked because people are looking around the Football League. But it just shows that there is quality there, especially in League Two. I think it's just because people just think, oh, League Two, you know, obviously not going to be good enough standard to cut it in the Championship. But then there's been repeated cases of players going from League Two or were touted in League Two. I mean, Daniel Bentley at Southend, fantastic goalkeeper, talk of Premier League clubs after him, etc. like that. That's just one example, and it shows that there is the quality in the players there and the talent that would be of use to Premier League and Championship clubs. But at the same time, you don't want a Premier League club to come in, buy the player and then never use him. You know, there's Grimes at Swansea, they got him from Exeter. He's been on the bench, but he's, you know, surely you'd want him playing first team football, and whether you look to loan him back out, I don't know. But as long as they're playing, then I think it'll be a good investment for the future anyway.
Well, there you go. There's your transfer news on the 72 podcast. Coming up, we're looking ahead to some of the midweek and weekend fixtures.
We love the Football League. The 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome to section 5 of the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire. Don't forget, you can get your thoughts into us on Twitter at FBL72 or visit the72.co.uk. I'm Billy Banks, and with the editor of the72.co.uk, that's Tom Carnduff. We've talked about all sorts on the podcast so far. We're going to move on to some of the games this week and at the weekend. And it's been this Sky Sports 10 games in 10 days thing going on, hasn't it, Tom? What have you made of it?
I can see the advantages of it, but at the same time, it's a bit messes with the schedule.
Yeah,
you look at
it's scattered, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they've introduced Thursday night football this season. I'm not a fan of that at all. I don't think Football League is a Thursday night.
League night.
Yeah, that rugby league. You know, occasionally Europa League. That's it. I don't agree. Yeah, exactly. I don't agree with
it's
football
just
league.
It's not right for football, really, is it? Yeah,
and you got to think about, you know, it's tough enough as it is travelling fans, going to games, and then when you're putting games on midweek as well, it's just going to cause all sorts of problems. But anyway, we're stuck with it, and over Christmas, Sky Sports going for 10 games in 10 days, which I suppose if you're a neutral in all of these, it's good to watch because there's football every night pretty much in the build-up to Christmas.
Or if you like Nottingham Forest, because they seem to have been on every night.
They seem to be featured a lot. I think they're on again tonight, is it?
And then they're on Monday night. Yeah.
Monday night, and then they're on after Christmas as well. I think the Leeds game they've got on telly as well. But never mind. I suppose that's if you can't get to the games, I suppose it's great, isn't it? But
yeah, there you go. It's certainly a good idea. I'm not sure if in practice it's working out too well. Let's move on to some of the games then. Tuesday night, Middlesbrough v Burnley. Second v fifth, of course. So it's a big one, this.
Yeah, it's Burnley, I think, expect them to be, you know, closer in the race than they are, but they're still in it. There's a bit of a gap, but hopefully a win against Middlesbrough will obviously push them in and put them in the race with the, make it five teams at the top gunning for first place. like Burnley, I mean, they recruited cleverly in the summer. Andre Gray, big fan of him, fantastic striker, seems to be scoring constantly. But at the same time, Middlesbrough at home aren't an easy team to beat at all. They'll be looking to try and, well, overtake Brighton, especially with the form that Brighton are in. A lot of people think that Middlesbrough will be the ones who win the league in the end via our poll that we did on Twitter over the weekend.
Or they come out on top as favourites to win.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people's favourites, either Middlesbrough or Derby. A lot of people don't think Brighton can carry it on.
I think I'd have to agree with that. I've gone with Derby to win it just because of their financial muscle.
Yeah.
I mean, they spent £12 million on a transfer deadline day. Not many championship sides can say that.
Yeah, that is true, but Middlesbrough will be looking to overtake Brighton, keep the pressure up on there as well. Because if Brighton just keep winning, how are you going to keep up with them? I know it sounds very obvious, but they need to be winning games. And if you can beat the teams around you, it shows that you are a genuine promotion contender team, because you can beat the top teams. And then if you go up, it shows that maybe you can compete in the Premier League, well, especially with the lower half of the table.
And Chris Hughton, the boss of Brighton, you know, he knows how to go the distance. Did it with Newcastle and did very well with Birmingham before getting the Norwich job. So they've got a good man at the helm. Wednesday night, Hull v Reading. Now, Hull found themselves 6 points off the top before the weekend. Managed to claw a couple back on Brighton with their victory. You know, they're taking on Reading in 12th position, bit of a crossroads for the season for them. They haven't got a manager at the moment either. I suppose we go with a comfortable Hull home win, really.
Yeah, you think, but then you've got to look at the circumstances as well. I mean, that's Wednesday night. Brian McDermott's been mentioned as coming back to Reading. He seems to be the clear favourite, and it's expected that before Wednesday's game, he'll be obviously announced as the new manager. So seems to get the new manager syndrome, you know, where team gets a new manager, that's it, they'll all perform. They all want to show
that. Dead cat bounce.
Yeah, they'll all show that, or want to show that they are capable. They deserve first team places, despite results not being as good as they hoped. Got a good set of players there, especially away at Hull. That'll be a place to go, really, and show why you deserve a first team place. But at the same time, Hull, the team, they've got the players, they've got them, even Steve Bruce, they've been there. Premier League obviously dropped out, but I can't see Reading really getting a win. Maybe they can nick a point, but in the same situation as Middlesbrough and Burnley, Hull will want to stay up in that race. It's going to be competitive. If you start dropping off at this point, especially halfway through the season, then you're going to struggle later on. So they'll definitely want to try and get as many points as they can. And you look at home to Reading, mid-table team, you'd expect, or a lot of people would expect them to get the 3 points.
Yeah, you certainly would. Also, on Friday, Birmingham-Cardiff. Birmingham have overperformed, it has to be said, under Gary Rowett this season. They've got quite a few injuries. And out of that, you know, area, you expected them to drop out of the top six. They have done that now. They're down in ninth, actually.
Yeah.
And, Cardiff are above them. An interesting one, though, because Birmingham have done well this season and Cardiff, pretty difficult to predict what they'll do.
Yeah, they're two teams. We spoke earlier about surprise packages this season. They're two teams who are surprised as well. They're going for the playoffs. Not many people would have predicted that at the start of the season. Like I said, Birmingham have got injury problems, but then they've fallen out of it in recent weeks. Their form's not been great, but at home to Cardiff, they'll be looking to get the win, ideally. If they can play football ideally the way that Rat wants, they sometimes let teams attack them. Cardiff do like to attack. If they can let them attack, catch them on the counter-attack, as they have done a few times this season, then they should do well. And hopefully for them, if they do get the win, they can close the gap on sixth and push themselves back into the playoff places and continue the so-called Rowett revolution.
The Rowett revolution. He's doing very well at Birmingham. I can see some clubs going after him in the not-too-distant future. So there you go, some great fixtures in midweek, into the weekend, and all the way up until Christmas in the Football League to look forward to. That's the end of Section 5. Coming up, it's the predictions.
You're listening to the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back to the final section of the 72 podcast here in association with Radio Yorkshire. It's time for our predictions. Let's have a look at last week's predictions. And Tom, you did pretty well. Wolves v Forest finished 1-1, which you predicted. So you got 3 points for that. Sam picked up 1 point. Tom, you got none. Then Derby Brighton, no one got the correct score. But Tom, you got the correct result, so you got a point for that. No points for anyone else. And then Sheffield United v Coventry, 1 point for you again, Tom, actually. So 2 points for the whole week. Not bad, actually, because your predictions are normally very, very poor. Tom, you won the week with 3 points. Sam got 1 point. So that leaves the table after week four. Tom, you're top with 9. Sam, second with 6. And Tom, bottom with 2. The Radio Yorkshire representative. I'm going to be Sam. Is that right this week?
Yeah, you'll step in for Sam.
So I'm stepping in for Sam. We've got 3 games going to be looking at. Middlesbrough v Burnley, Ipswich, Derby and Northampton versus Portsmouth. I've done my suggestions. I'm going to come to you first, Tom Carnduff, because I've just realised that Tom Feeney's in the studio and having 2 Toms can be quite confusing. So we've got Tom C and Tom F. We'll start with you, Tom C.
Right, so Middlesbrough Burnley, we just spoke about it in the last section. Good game, should be a good attacking game for both sides. But Middlesbrough is a tough place to go.
It is.
I just can't really don't know what to say. I'm going to say Middlesbrough will nick it 2-1.
2-1 to Middlesbrough for Tom C. Tom F.
Do you know what? I think Dave Nugent having a ban is really going to affect them. He got that red card for what he did, let's say, nearly strangling a player. So, to me, I think Burnley will win this one. I've got a feeling Andre Gray will get a couple. So, I'm going to say 2-1 to Burnley.
2-1 to Burnley. I think Middlesbrough, especially at home, will be too much for Burnley. They're also very good defensively. I can see them nicking it 1-0. Let's move on to Ipswich v Derby. Intriguing encounter this, because Ipswich have been really good in recent weeks. Derby, of course, we know how good they are. Both sides going for promotion, realistically. Tom C, thoughts?
Yep. Ipswich, we spoke about them in the first section. Mick McCarthy and Daryl Murphy getting player and manager of the month, so they'll be quite happy with that. I think they're in more of a competitive position than Derby. I know it sounds silly because they're both looking, well, separate things, but Ipswich, that sixth place is going to be very, very competitive, more so than I'd say top end of the table. Saying that, Derby are a very good team. We spoke about the spending power, the squad they've got, so I'm going to say 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw. Tom F.
Do you know what? I'm a massive Mick McCarthy fan.
Who isn't?
The work he's done is absolutely incredible, and I love the song that was released a few weeks ago from him. I mean, the squad that he's put together, you've not really got any standout names. No, you know, Daryl Murphy, when he joined, wasn't a massive name, but he just gets the squad working so well. And Freddie Sears has been absolutely fantastic this year, you know, to get him from Colchester United like they did. I've got a feeling Ipswich will win this one. Derby got lucky at the weekend. That penalty against Brighton, I didn't think was one. And I've got a feeling Derby's bit of luck will run out. I'm going to say Ipswich 1, Derby 0.
Very interesting. So, Tom, if you've gone for an Ipswich win, Tom C's gone for a draw. I'm going to go for 3-1 Derby. Ooh. I think they're going to be pretty annoyed they couldn't beat Brighton at home and end that unbeaten record. I think they might take out their anger on Ipswich, and I think their quality will prove the key there. So I think it'll be a 3-1 win for Derby. Finally, we're going to head down to League 2.
Yep,
I need a confirmation on that. Don't normally look that far down the Football League pyramid, if I'm honest. We've got Northampton v Portsmouth, which I'm told is a top-of-the-table clash. Tom C, what do you reckon for this one?
Yeah, Northampton have done exceptionally well this season, especially with what's gone on behind the scenes. All the talk's been off the pitch. But yeah, on the pitch, the team's still performing. They find themselves sitting top of the table, and rightly so, they've deserved it. Fantastic performances throughout the season since August. I think they'll carry it on. I think Portsmouth are up there as well, but Northampton, despite what's happened, like I've said it a few times, they've got that feel-good factor going on there. So I'm going to say 2-0 to Northampton.
2-0 Northampton. Tom F, you normally deal with non-league football, but it's just not much better than non-league.
I think that's a bit harsh in Northampton. I mean, look, you know, when I look at it, I think Northampton, marvellous win against Luton to win 4-3, the confidence they'll have, and also the fact that they've had the financial constraints and now that's been got rid of. They are in a brilliant position. Portsmouth's away form is very impressive, though. Their home form at times has been a bit edgy, but their away form is good. So, do you know what? I'm going to call this a draw. High scoring, though. Let's go 2-2.
2-2 draw from Tom Feeney. Before asking Tom, before doing this show, I had no idea where either side were in the league. I heard Northampton are higher, so I'm going to go for a 2-1 win for Northampton. There's our predictions. We'll find out the results of them next week. Thank you very much, lads, for contributing. You've been listening to the 72 podcast in association with Radio Yorkshire. Don't forget, you can get in touch with the72.co.uk by going to the website or sending their thoughts via Twitter at FBL72. That is on Twitter. Thank you very much for listening.
All About the Game, the 72 podcast, in association with Radio Yorkshire.